You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Irirangi Pō, Radio Bosom.
The Wire.
Welcome back to The Wire. Now, finally on the show today, last week it was announced that Susie Dawson will be the new leader of the Internet Party at this year's election. Susie is a citizen journalist and activist who is currently based in Moscow on what she calls self-imposed exile. Well, we are very pleased to have on the line right now, live from Moscow, Susie Dawson. Hi, Susie.
Sure, how are you?
Good. Thanks for coming on the show today.
No problem.
So I guess firstly, for people who don't know who you are, what is your background?
What is my background? Well, professionally, I have an IT background, and I have a bunch of other interests as well. Particularly just around music and horse riding and cultural things like that. In terms of activism, I have I accidentally became an activist and a journalist in 2011 just by trying to help support my community and the efforts that were going on to get some kind of accountability and to try and devise some new system because the current paradigm really was not working for us and a lot of people were feeling that and wanting some kind of change. I became a journalist because simply by reporting the truth of what was actually happening on the ground because the media were not fairly getting our messages across.
And what made...
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, so basically what made you want to take on this role of the Internet Party leadership?
Well, I must admit, I spat a huge mouthful of chicken soup out all over my dining table when I was first asked to consider the leadership because I definitely had never conceived of myself as a politician, but I also recognised that maybe that's what we need in Parliament. Maybe we need some real people that are entering it for the right reasons rather than some kind of predetermined career choice.
And what...
I've always thought that maybe we should have doctors and teachers and researchers and maybe even journalists entering Parliament rather than just, you know, politics majors.
And what are your aims for the Internet Party this election? What would be a good result for you?
Well, I think there was a huge mistake made in 2014 where the success or failure of the election was going to determine the longevity or existence of the party. I think that the goals of the party have got to be to serve in the long term and to tie the existence of a political party to a single election campaign doesn't seem to serve anyone's interest, really. So we are building initiatives that are going to serve New Zealand for years to come and outside of just the electoral cycle. It's always seemed really strange to me, actually, that the New Zealand public can vote on American Idol, The Voice, once a week. You know, you can say who your favourite singer is every Sunday night, but you only get to have a say in your government and your the future of your country once every 3 years. Doesn't make a lot of sense. So I'm hoping that we can bring about some initiatives that are going to empower people month in and month out, year in and year out.
And what will your top priorities be in terms of policy?
Well, obviously we have a tech focus. We're very future-thinking and forward-thinking. We will be rolling some initiatives out in the coming weeks that are not just New Zealand first, but world first. So you can expect to see some things from us, especially around transparency in the political party that have never been seen before by any other political parties. But we're also in a position where some of our 2014 policies have been made defunct by the declining situation in New Zealand. For example, in 2014, we're hoping to give people cheaper internet. But in 2017, people don't have a house to have internet in. So we have been forced to address some of the social issues that the really poor state of governance in New Zealand has produced. So we do have some more socially minded policies, though predominantly most of it is going to be around building and infrastructure where we can build the economy in a way that embraces technology and makes it work for us in the future rather than technological advances just being military or intelligence agencies or spying networks, you know, against the people. We need to create initiatives and are creating initiatives where the people can be empowered by the technology.
Okay, and Susie, it's Daniel here. I'm the producer of the show. And we've had a text in. Someone has said they live in Glenbrook Beach. Opposite the house is a large new development area being supplied with fibre broadband directly across the road. They're stuck with slow rural wireless and will not have access to said fibre service. How will you resolve such issues? How are you going to make sure fibre is of access to everyone, regardless of where they are?
So our fibre policies remain the same as they did in 2014. We believe that everyone in New Zealand should have the same access to high-speed internet. We also believe that we need to have a second Southern Cross cable, and that needs to be a cable that is controlled by us. We were really concerned by Edward Snowden's revelations at the Moment of Truth event that the Southern Cross cable facility in Takapuna, actually in the North Shore of Auckland, it turns out isn't even a New Zealand facility. It is an NSA-owned facility listed on their infrastructure register in the United States. That's not good enough. New Zealand needs to own its own critical infrastructure. We cannot be dependent upon foreign nations for that. So that's our major focus, is that we should not only be able to provide everyone with a high-quality internet, but we should own it as well.
Now, just in regards to your situation in Moscow, you've applied for temporary asylum there. Will you be returning to New Zealand for the campaign? And if not, how then are you going to campaign?
Well, we have not really had a chance yet to announce it, but there are a lot of people that are involved in our campaign. And our campaign, we've been working on it full-time since February of this year. So more information about this will be coming out in the next couple of weeks, but we actually have a huge team behind this campaign. It's not just me and our comms director, as some people have speculated. And our campaign team in Auckland is led by some pretty notable New Zealanders, as you'll hear more about coming soon. So we are going to have people on the ground throughout New Zealand. And also, we are, rather than having a 9-to-5 office, we actually run a 24/7 online office, where our team jumps on and works whenever they can, every single day, and collaborates together. So I don't think that I need to necessarily physically be there, because we have all of our candidate teams and we have everybody else. But that's not to say that I won't be either. It just depends what happens with my legal situation.
So you don't know whether you'll be in New Zealand or not through this campaign. And if you were to be successful as well, I mean, you would really have to sort out that legal situation to be able to govern in New Zealand.
Well, this is an issue of contention. We believe that if I was an MP, that I would be entitled to government protection and government security, and that maybe that would solve some of the issues that I was facing that led me to have to leave New Zealand. Also, I never described myself as a self-imposed exile. Those were words that were invented by the New Zealand Herald and then that were picked up on by other publications. I don't like those words because I feel it's actually victim blaming. What they're suggesting is that it's my fault that I was in exile, and that's actually the opposite of the case. So I've had several people reach out to me in recent days, one of whom is actually an ex-top spy cop. He was in charge of one of the police intelligence units, and he said to me that not only does he believe me, but he knows from the inside that everything that I was reporting was happening to me. That's exactly what they do to the targets, is exactly how it is. I've also had a number of other activists and people related who are politically active reach out to me and tell me that they've been experiencing exactly the same things that are and that I describe, in particularly in my documentary and also in my reporting. So
could you just explain?
The media would like to present it as if it is an issue that can be debated, but I think, like other,
could you,
like in the UK, for
example. Sorry to cut you off, but could you just explain?
Sure, go ahead.
Some of your situations, because on your website you make several claims that the New Zealand government has tried to kill you, including one incident where they allegedly tried to drive you off a cliff. That's quite serious, isn't it? If that's true.
Yeah, it is really serious. And it didn't start out that way. It started out just with my house being broken into and me being followed around and me being photographed and my belongings being stolen. And this happened to my entire media team. This happened to a number of activists that I was associated with. I was just one of those targets. Many people, six people in New Zealand, have spoken out on the record and said that they knew this was happening to me at the time. Obviously, I did make complaints. Obviously, I did try to get redress for what was going on. And I was outright told by the New Zealand police, as long as I, this is a direct quote, as long as I am an activist, this will happen to me. So there was no redress available to me. And as it progressed, it started out during the Occupy movement, and then it continued as I worked on the GCSB campaign, and then it continued as I worked for years on the TPPA No Way campaign. And then it got really serious in 2014 during the, around the timing of the Moment of Truth and the Internet Party campaign in 2014. So it seemed that the more effect I was having by that point, by 2014, WikiLeaks, for example, was sharing my work. I was getting a very high profile in international circles. I was being, my work was always pretty suppressed in New Zealand, but it was very well known internationally. And it seemed that the New Zealand government decided that trying to shut me up would silence that voice, that international voice. We had pushed the TPPA No Way campaign to trending number two worldwide on Twitter. So that gives you some idea of exactly how high
Susie,
level...
Susie, I'm going to have to interrupt you. Sorry, we're running low on time. I'd just like to get one last question as well. That murder is a huge accusation there. The fact that the New Zealand government has tried to kill you, that is a massive, massive accusation. How can you
well,
expect people to believe this?
Well, to me, it's not just an accusation. It's actually my life and I experience it. So I understand that people would like to debate it as if, you know, it's an if, but... For me, I actually lived through it. I experienced it. And there, everyone who is in the security services in New Zealand recognizes what happened to me as being something that goes on. And so do activists and journalists who have also been targeted. So, but I do understand it comes as a huge shock to the average member of the public who has not experienced that.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.